Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Liv Tyler and Alicia Silverstone in the Aerosmith video called Crazy. We just finished watching it, and I can now confirm that I've converted Maitha into also thinking that they should have been queer.
Alicia was like literally in drag.
Dressed as, and she was a drag king basically, mm-hmm. while Liv Tyler gave her a dance at a strip club and literally like took off her clothes and threw it at Alicia Silverstone. And I now know how my sexual awakening happened at like 5.
Yes, this is just all a part of your research to figure out how did I know I was gay so fucking fast.
Yep, and now I know why I, whenever that video used to come on, I used to like run into a room and like stop what I was doing.
Crazy. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? And if you don't know, you will now know. I am Fried Papita. I'm Cynthia.
She's the Cabrona, and I am the Chingona, Maite, the writer chick, the one that lives in LA. She lives in Dallas. Let's just go through like some, you know, intro shit, because nobody knows who we are.
No one knows who. Which I mean, I think our voices are kind of similar to people that don't know us. You know,
I guess
if you don't know us, they could be similar. But yeah, hey, what's up, y'all? It's been like, what, 2 weeks?
I don't know.
It's been some weeks, guys. I don't know how long it's been. But I know that I'm in a room right next to Maitha in California, and we've been having kind of nonstop days since I got here.
I've jammed the fuck out of this weekend. Yeah. I was like, we're going to do every single thing right now.
On Saturday, like the day I landed, it was absolutely insane because the moment that right after we landed, we were supposed to do an interview, and after that we'd had another one. We had 3 total interviews for that day,
right,
followed by stopping by to go see a web series getting filmed. So
yeah, you got here, one of our interviews canceled, so we did 2 that day after all.
Mm-hmm.
We first came over here. What did we do? We had something that we needed to do. Like, dropped off our shit, went and bought a fuck ton of candy.
Yes, we bought gancitos.
Gancitos and, like, paletas de chile. And we've just been, like, throwing them at people all weekend. And then we interviewed, like, 2 amazing people on Saturday. And then we went out with an amazing functional series shoot. Yes. We went to go see them shoot for a little bit.
And then we went to hang out with our homies, Christy and her lovely, lovely fiancé. That was so sweet. To show us around
for sure. Yeah.
Oh my god, it was so exhausting, dude. I didn't sleep anything. Like, I was like running off of just like adrenaline, and like I had been up since maybe I didn't sleep at all. I slept like on and off like two hours on the plane, and then I took like an hour nap total, so I was functioning off 3 hours of sleep and completely nonstop since we landed. So it was what a motherfucking day. And that's with like one less interview. So thank mm-hmm. God, because I would have been dead.
It was a lot. And then Sunday there was no interviews. I did that on purpose. I was like, let's reserve this for something else. And it just so happened that what fell into our laps was after breakfast with one of my coworkers. Hey, what's up, Drew? We went to the Central American Film Festival, which was at UCLA. We were invited by the lovely Janet Casella from GLAAD.
Oh my god, yes. It was amazing.
It was great.
We got to watch emerging filmmakers that day.
Right. Let me look up the program. So unfortunately, we didn't get to go to the first couple of days, but we got to go to the very last day, which consisted of a shorts program and a film. And
there's a bunch of like shorts and emerging filmmakers, and they're all kind of amazing. Did you want to go through them?
Or I do want to go through them. Kind of like
list the names and the directors.
I want to actually like try to talk about them at least a little bit. Obviously, I think quite a few of these, like if you Google them, you can watch them. I think like some of them are even like on YouTube and stuff like that.
YouTube.
So just, you know, if any of these like strike your interest, then just like Google it. Loca. We'll try to put some links up too on cabronasychingonas.com. But yeah, I guess let's just go in order from those shorts. This is, like, once again, it's a Central American film festival, so most of the people creating these films and in the films were Central American, and we were, like, surprised that more people weren't there.
Yeah.
Really support next year, guys. I know this is a very new festival, so it's not like it's gonna be a big ass AFI festival, you know, like the other one that we went to. But yeah,
the important part is that we have to support each other and show out for things like this. I mean, just because we're Mexican doesn't mean we can't go support our Central American brothers and sisters as they make art, you know? Like, I think it's so healthy and good for all of us to go out there and just support each other. Like, being Mexican is not, like, the end all of all fucking cultures. Like, get the fuck out of here. So
anyways, yeah, the first one on the list is Para Mirar un Eclipse by Roberto Joen, and this one was kind of just about, like, this guy who he's thinking about his past. I think he goes back to his childhood home and, like, relives some moments that he spent with, like, a friend.
Yeah, maybe his friend passed at the beginning, because I feel like it was coming from a funeral.
Where it wasn't super clear. It was definitely a little abstract on that. But it was beautifully shot. It was, like, a lot of the child actors were fantastic.
Yeah.
That's kind of a rare thing. So congrats to them on, like, a low budget, just getting really great child actors.
Yeah, and then the next one was Death Spinner by Clisman Cifuentes. Is that Clisman?
Probably.
Clisman Cifuentes. And I like it, dude. It was, like, a really original, like, horror concept that all
fidget
comes from
spinner,
like,
though.
It's so like millennial, though. It was, like, about fidget spinners and, like, how, you know, those Twitter threads that you see, if you don't retweet this, you get 7 years of bad luck. Like, and I guess little kids believe it and they send it to each other, and it caused everyone to become, like, zombies or their souls to be taken. I don't know.
It reminded me of, like, back in the day when, like, news outlets would get your parents in their feelings about, like, really random shit. Like, they'd be like, oh, Harry Potter's of the devil, you know what I mean,
if you wear a black bracelet,
right? Like, all these little things. And it's like fidget spinner was, like, the next thing where it's like, oh, if you play this weird demonic game, that I guess it was a play on, like, what you do with Ouija boards, but you do it with a fidget spinner, and, like, all this stuff. I thought it was just really it was fun, you know what I mean?
It was an interesting thing to see, because it's like, what the fuck, like, I've never thought of that. So that's, it was original in that concept,
and
so
it translated to all cultures despite being a Central American film. Like,
yeah,
it was good. Super, which is, like, one of the biggest messages that kind of came out of this film or this film festival, was that, like, all this stuff, like, it's a Central American festival, that's what we're celebrating right now, and it's good that we need to concentrate on that, but nevertheless, like, anybody can watch these, anybody can go to this festival, just fucking go check this shit out.
Oh my god. And then the next one is, like, it was beautiful.
It was Life on a String by Jonathan de la Silva, who is this is a documentary, and this is one of your favorite ones, so I'm gonna let you talk about it.
Yeah, so it's actually a documentary about puppeteering, which I never thought I would find interesting or compelling at all, and yet he somehow, this director, this filmmaker, has found the most interesting people in puppeteering. He chose a black puppeteer who makes his own puppets, and he got to travel the world because his puppets were so unique, and I don't know, his life story is just so interesting. And then another gentleman who is Salvadoran, I believe, and how, you know, he's both still, you know, very firm in his, like, he stands still in his masculinity, but at the same time, like, he's a puppeteer and he dresses up in, like, overalls and gets to, you know, make little babies really happy or children really happy. And I think that's really cool, and it says a lot about identity and masculinity. And I feel like they're allowing, he made this beautiful documentary that allows for men to maybe see themselves differently and more, less confined to the gender binary. And it was really cute. I liked it. It was my favorite.
For sure. Another one that I thought was interesting, like, especially after I found out that the creator, Jose Martinez, who is from Houston, and I believe he's in Austin right now because he's going to UT Austin, he made this when he was still in high school.
That's so impressive.
With the help of UT Austin equipment for film. And he just kind of like, he just went for it. And he did this, like, this take on Freaky Friday where he kind of put in religion into it. And like, that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but I think that it was creative enough, you know what I mean? And just putting in your own passion and your own beliefs into something doesn't, it's not the worst thing, you know? And it was just such an interesting take on Freaky Friday. And it was, it's called like Melting religious. Ice.
Yeah, it's called, right. Melting Ice.
Called Melting Ice. And it is talking about ICE as in fucking Border Patrol ass motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, like, it's kind of a hopeful look at it. And it's kind of, like, something that, well, I think somebody in the audience was saying, like, this needs to be sent out to all ICE agents immediately. You know what I mean? Not that I think that it would necessarily.
I don't know. I don't know if they're human, if they have soul, but but no, this is really impressive for someone who's so young and already creating. That says a lot about him already. So I'm really excited to see what he does next, and hope he hits us up. I'm really excited about to see what he's gonna do,
for sure.
And then I believe the next one is, oh, another documentary that we fucking loved. Like,
this one was my favorite.
It might be mine. It's up there. Con o Sin Papeles by Aria Zapata. And it was fucking amazing. This documentary centered migrant farm workers and everyone that, like, picks tomatoes, who's out there on the fields working for us to have food and like allowing them to speak for themselves, which is something that no one does in this country, is they don't allow immigrants and migrant workers to speak for themselves. And it was really beautiful to get a perspective into their home life, to their dreams, to their hopes, and the reason why they're here, and how difficult that can be, and what it means for them to be here separated from their family. And they did this all in a documentary, in a short, it was like 15 minutes long. It was beautiful. What do you think? It's your favorite.
It was one of my favorites. I loved so many like specific little moments in it. I don't think it's really a spoiler. Like, this is like a documentary. This is just kind of detailing their life, but there's two particular moments that just stood out to me. There's one where there's this guy who, like, truly in his heart just believed it to no end that as long as he keeps working his ass off and working hard and staying true to that, that he'll have these things. And he has pictures up on the wall of, like, cars that he wants, or a house that he wants, or, like, places he wants to visit, all these things that, like, a lot of people can, they're reachable for them, you know what I mean? But he's just, like, he's putting it in his face every single day, so that he has to see it every day, and that's his motivation to go out and do this pretty tedious, fucked up work. And that was one moment that stood out to me, because he's at home, you know what I mean? He's speaking for himself, and everybody in this film is kind of speaking for themselves, which is beautiful. The second moment that really stood out to me, especially towards the end of the film, there's certain workers who are, I guess you kind of, they're allowed to really speak their thoughts, you know what I mean? The literal line, con o sin papeles, there's this guy at the end kind of having a monologue about, like, how he feels about the people who are always talking shit about undocumented immigrants. He's just like, basically summed up in my words, yeah, like, fuck you, like, we're doing all this shit, con o sin papeles, and you're over here talking shit, like, you're just talking shit as if literally everything that goes into your mouth isn't because of an immigrant. Mm-hmm.
He's so. Like, we feed you and you guys hate us? We're confused. was like,
they're
what?
Just pissed, and they're allowed to be pissed. And I was glad that was in there.
And I liked it because it felt like it was centering my parents. Like, it felt like it was centering my father in a way. Not that he did. I don't know what he did when he first got here, but all of them look like him. You know, they sound like him. And I don't ever really get to see my dad portrayed in media. So, like, even just this documentary, I was just like, oh my God, like, that's my dad. Like, that's my papi. Like, that man who's dark as fuck with his hat and his arms and his hands all tattered and torn. And I'm just like, oh, that's my dad. So, like, that was really, I started to feel things. You know, my heart did a thing.
The third documentary that was there was called Resilience at the Roots. It was also, this one was actually one that was in a Central American country. It was filmed there, and it was about a lot of the devastation that has happened there. One, because of the civil war in El Salvador, if I'm not crazy. Yeah. And the other ones were just like natural disasters that kind of came through and just swept everything away.
Well, the things humans do to destroy the planet, like,
which is linked, you know, to, yeah, to global warming and all this other shit, and how they themselves are taking steps to keep things more sustainable. And they talk about, like, specific parts of, like, the environment there that are so crucial for them. And
I mean, it was really good because it's kind of showing that there's a lot of people in El Salvador that are doing good, that are, they're helping, they're the helpers, and they're making sure to take care of that they care about the ecology, the society, the people, the plants, the wildlife. There's just so much, and it's so rich, you know, and natural resources there, but it's just, it's being destroyed by war and capitalism, so...
And I forgot to mention, that was made by Jake Ratner and I believe funded by Eco Viva.
Mm-hmm. And then the next one is an interesting take on identity, on what it means to be, you know, an immigrant and a child of immigrants, what it means to be othered in the United States. It's called Hyphen by Maria Cervillon.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. And it was cool. It was, how would I describe it? Avant-garde. It was an avant-garde take on identity in the United States. And, you know, it led to like maybe 5 different scenes, starting at childhood, you know, her getting explained what the war was in El Salvador, and then being, you know, an early adolescence and trying to find your place in your school, in your childhood, when you don't fit in with anyone, and then what it means to be that in college, and what it means to be in an interracial relationship with someone who maybe just kind of wouldn't naturally get the same things as you, and then towards the end, what it means to, you know, decolonize a space, you know, spaces that aren't meant for us, so white spaces. She goes to, like, Iceland?
I believe it was Iceland, yeah.
Yeah, and she goes and decolonizes Iceland alone by herself. And what she finds herself is that, you know, you can be a Central American woman and what it means now. It's not just, you know, this one thing, this one idea. So I thought it was an interesting take on identity.
It was really just like a short take of, like, almost like a biopic. She just kind of took 5 big moments of her life and just played them out in, like, chronological order. And, like, even though it's not, like, a traditional plot structure, it's really just
it's avant-garde, that's all.
I don't think avant-garde is the word. It's not, like, an art film, you know what I mean? Like, it's a person who's, like, there's a...
Yeah, but, like, there's not, like, a structure or
Well, that's what plot. I'm saying. It's not a traditional structure. Avant-garde is, like, a little wilder. I thought it
was. There was, like, animation. What are you talking about?
There's some, yeah, they animate, like, to showcase, like, her creativity. But yeah, not quite avant-garde, but I see what you mean. But what she's basically saying is that, like, it just doesn't follow your typical 3-act structure or anything like that. It's just more of a retelling of specific moments in her life.
It reads more like a book, sort of. I don't know what it is.
I'm like, I don't know. Sure.
Okay, Maitha. Okay, sure, Maitha. All right. What's next?
Anyways, following that was just a Q&A where they talked about their stuff and people were able to react to it. And a lot of people were just kind of, like, happy that Central Americans were centered. Like, it was just that simple fact. It was just like, this film program is centering them, and that's it.
That was lit. There were, like, abuelas there.
Yeah, there was people of all ages.
And children. It was cool.
It was great, yeah. So I'm glad that we got to see that. After that, there was Morazan by director Hispano Duron, produced by Jose Dagoberto Martinez. We didn't stick around for all of it, but it was pretty well produced. It seemed like it was going, like, really well. It just wasn't up our alley because it's just a bunch of dudes who are war stuff.
I didn't see the Bechdel
test, like, would be destroyed upon arrival in this film.
I, like, turned to Maitha and was like, dude, there, I've not seen a woman speak at all.
So we didn't stick around for it, partly because we had other things to do that day. It was just pretty stuffed, but that's another one that you could possibly check out if you're into, like, timepieces.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's a recap of what we thought about these movies. Or these short films.
No, yeah, no, I'm excited to see what they do later on, because it was, like, they were pretty good efforts, like, everybody, so.
Word.
I was excited. But that wasn't the only film festival we went to that day.
Yeah.
We went to two in the same day. We did the most super LA thing ever.
Right. I mean, we really... Basically, AFI has... AFI Film Festival has a... It has, like, individual screenings that you can just go to. You don't have to, like, attend a whole festival. You don't have to do a whole thing. You can literally just go to this one screening or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to see Rafiki, which some of you might know as this film from Kenya, like, made in Kenya, and that was banned by its own country because homosexuality is not legal in that country to this day.
Yeah, you could die for being gay in Kenya, so... Seeing this movie in the United States with all our fucking privilege, I mean, it was amazing and beautiful. And honestly, I guess, do we want to get into, like, plot or just... I would just want to talk about how fucking beautiful this is and how, like...
Well, to... I like, want to give a little background. Yeah, just, like, a little bit.
Okay, so Rafiki takes... is about two daughters of political opponents.
It's no. I mean, a background of the movie being made, not the plot. Then we can get in the plot. Well, so, like,
what do you know about the movie getting made, like, other than it's, like, illegal and she made it?
Okay. Are you done with the attitude? Done? Okay, cool. This was directed by Wanuri Kahui. I probably can't pronounce that because I'm a fucking noob. Co-written by the director and Jenna Kato Bass. And it stars Samantha Mugatsia, Neville Misati, and I believe those are the two main stars. And basically, this movie, because of the ban in Kenya, like, it wasn't going to qualify at the Oscars for Best Foreign Language Film. So the High Court that banned it, they temporarily lifted it so that it could showcase... and
7 days only.
For 7 days. Which at the very least, yeah, qualified it for the Oscars. So here's hoping that it does well there. I think that it will. I think it was an amazing film.
Yeah. Because the rule is that you have to actually show your movie in your home country to be eligible. So they just did that for that 7 days, which is kind of wild.
And just my last bit of background will be that it was inspired heavily by these 2007 film called Jambula Tree. So that's another one that you guys can totally check out. And now we can get into the plot.
Yay. Okay, so it's about, plot-wise, it's a story about two daughters of political opponents. One daughter is kind of estranged from her father, in the sense that maybe their relationship isn't as close-knit as she thought. There's still a lot of things between her and her father that don't seem completely healthy. They don't communicate in the way that you think they would. But then you see her relationship with her mother, because both of her parents are divorced and her father's married someone new. She's kind of, you know, you're introduced to her story and it kind of centers around her. And another thing I really like about it centering her is because she's actually more masculine of center, and I think it's rare that we get to, like, centralize the mask of center Butch and kind of, like, see her story. But and then you also meet her love interest, Ziki.
Yeah,
you get to meet her love interest Ziki, who at first look you're not really sure who this crazy girl is, because she's just, like, running through her streets with her best friends, like, dancing, and it's just kind of beautiful. And, like, I've never seen anything like this, where we get to see queer Black people, like, experience joy and experience, like, dating and romance. And, like, plot wise like, the first more than half of the movie was, like, beautiful and the most amazing thing I've ever seen. You get to see their love story. I don't think I'm ruining it by saying it's a love story, but you get to see how they kind of come together and what it means to their families, what it means to be queer and Kenyan, and to have other people notice that, and to have society's pressure on you to conform, or what it means to be a woman in Kenya, and, like, what are your limitations? Are you allowed to be a doctor, or are you only going to be a nurse? And so a lot of these things get brought up in this film. And like I said, the first portion of this movie are beautiful, and it's so fucking, like, revolutionary to see, like, queer Black women in love, and to give it that kind of poetry that it deserves, and the correct lighting and the correct funding that Maita was talking about, that she's never seen something so well produced, which is facts, y'all. She should have seen this crowd. But yeah, plot wise, I don't know if I want to go talk about the ending part of this.
No,
not at all, right?
We're not spoiling this, because okay. I want you guys to go see this. Like, I think that it's just so important. Like, I know that I have like the privilege of being here in LA, where screenings, you know, are not rare. It's not hard to find that kind of thing. But if you can, you know, try to support it when it comes to your town. I mean, it's so rare. I wouldn't say it's the best produced thing I've ever seen in the world, but
no, obviously, as like a queer film,
it was just surprising that it was that well produced, and it was an indie, and it was like, you know, a film that people don't fund. People don't go out there and think like, oh yeah, this story is gonna make money. You know what I mean? Like, people don't usually roll their dice on us. Mm-mm. So, and they did in this movie, and they did it really just so well. Like, when I tell you that the freaking wardrobe was out of this world.
Oh my God.
America wishes they were on Kenya's fashion level. Like, Jesus, the colors, like, even not even just on the people, like the way that it's set up, like
everything,
the buildings. I love the way that they have the buildings set up, like
the buildings were like another character. Like, it's like a community. Kenya was another character.
There was like this community, and it's just like people like knew each other, and then certain characters that are like super funny in the beginning, like you see like they're not just this funny character. Like,
no.
They can have their own problematic thoughts, their own problematic feelings, and the complexity of the parents who, like, had very strong feelings about their daughters, of course, and the people who have done bad things and are kind of shown as bad people also get their, like, have that script flipped, if you will. Like nobody is just one thing, and nobody stays as one thing.
It's a super complex story to tell. It's so that, like, a character that we find funny in the beginning, it's kind of gray with that character. Like, I wanted to hate her, but then even at the end, I was just kind of like, the reality is that she's not going to stop existing. She's just a human who's really fucking flawed and probably evil. But
you see, like, how these people that you come to like, especially, like, so much in the first half of the film, and it's not like they're completely unlikable by the end, but they do really misguided things. And that's where you're like, fuck. Like, all this yet, because of a government that can't accept these people. And, of course, there's a lot of factors that go into that, right? Like, religion and more.
And, but again, I feel like we were still getting an extremely privileged POV because they were both daughters of politicians. So it's a little bit different. Like, had they just been regular people, I don't think the story would have gone the way it did. But I'm glad that they were privileged. Like, if you think about it, they're very well protected. So,
who knows how shit could have gone. Like, basically, yeah,
had they not been daughters of politicians, which is a whole nother thing.
So. Yeah. So, I just think that this is just like, you know, I think it's something that we wouldn't want to see here, done here in America, because we've had that a lot. We've had a story like this a lot where, you know, they're forbidden because they're gay, and mm-hmm. that's it. That's not something I want to see here anymore, but in Kenya, that's such a necessary thing still, because
the queer pain in the story was necessary and appropriate for the story that which they were telling, which is about Kenya, where it's still very violent and very illegal to be queer. So Americans don't have that thing. Like, y'all need to get it together. Queer pain, I'm done with it. But queer pain in the way, in the context that it was used here, was extremely well done. And I don't want, if I have to have queer pain, I will have this kind of queer pain versus, you know, Boys Don't Cry and like Brokeback Mountain, you know.
Well, those were that's the thing, those movies in their time, you know,
they're based on true stories.
Those movies in their time were made for a reason, and I think America did need those movies in those times. Maybe even still, honestly, today we kind of still need that shit, but not quite to the point where all our movies are that.
We don't need to see all the violence.
So
that's all I'm saying. We don't need to always see the violence itself.
So
it can exist, but I don't need to see that shit.
So back then, it was definitely necessary. And just like we needed Boys Don't Cry back then, we needed Brokeback Mountain back then, we now need Rafiki in Kenya and in other countries with similar laws and similar problems. So that's for one. That's the main reason that queer pain in this particular film, like, it was validated. It was like, mm-hmm. it was definitely one that we can support 100% of the way.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're gonna spend your money out here on fucking Boy Erase, like, you can spend your fucking money on Rafiki first. And for, like, if you can find this shit online to rent or stream, I recommend doing it, because I give this movie like 5 panluces, like, honestly. Like, if I'm gonna rate it, like, we don't have to rate it all right now, but I'm just saying, it's that good and it made me that happy. I smiled like for the first half of the movie. Like, I was sitting there like a total nerd, just like, oh my god, I'm so happy, like, this is so well done and shot.
At the end of the day, this was late at night when we went to go watch it on Sunday, and we were exhausted. I was fucking exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need a fucking cafecito, so no cafecitos on this film, you know what I mean? Like, it's just this, there's nothing to complain about here, is what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing to complain about at all. Like, yes, there's parts of it that just hurt me to my core, but that was necessary. The intent.
Yeah.
That was the point. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's people that it needs to hit that way. Mm. So, yeah, there's just production. A fucking one. Visuals. A fucking
those
two.
Those shots, though, dude. Those close-ups where they're like, get into their faces. And I was like... I can feel their soul from here.
It was adorable, and then there was a mixture of languages that was done really, really well, really naturally.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it was such a good movie. It's so good.
And they did a lot. They did something that's really important, is that they really highlighted how strongly religion can affect politics, because all the politicians were meeting and getting called out during church. You know, like. That was everyone's common space in Kenya, was the church. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that's interesting, too, to see the way religion plays such a strong and backwards part, because that's not really the real religion, honestly, in some countries, and what that means for queer people just trying to survive, just trying to be. And, I mean, tons of trigger warnings if you have them. Tons of them here, okay?
There's violence.
Violence.
That's probably going to be the number one. There's not too much other than that. There's just... There's just an amount of violence. I wouldn't say it's like, oh, a bunch of the movie is violence. Like, there's really just like a certain point that is violence.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah. But it's extremely hard to watch. Like, they did it in a way where you were just like... Oh, and I will say that the director wasn't afraid to go a little experimental, mm-hmm. in the way that the audio was done. Sometimes it overlapped with different parts of the scenes, mm-hmm. but they somehow like balanced it in a way that really works, where you get to see a scene after the dialogue that's currently going on. And it's interesting.
Yeah. At first I thought it was just like a mix up. And then I was like, oh wait, I'm getting the effect. The intent is there. But at first I was like, what's happening?
Yeah. So I'm glad that this movie could go there too. Like, it's not just like telling an important story and doing it well. It's like you get to fuck around and like do something innovative, you know, in film, which is fucking props to this director.
And I love the intro credits, because like movies don't have intro credits anymore, but this one did.
This one did it really well.
And it felt like the show I've always wanted to watch, you know, like it starts off with these like intro credits and these visuals and these colors. And I think it's just doing that to help place what you're going to be seeing and the visuals you're going to be seeing throughout the rest of the movie. And so I thought it was really cool. I usually don't like shit like that, but it was nice.
Yeah. I think sometimes, like, especially recently, like creators will forget that, like, sometimes
Grease did it.
Like, yes, you spending 5 minutes kind of in just scenery exposition seems useless, but like, I fucking like felt like it was, you know what I mean? Like that time that was spent just showing you where you're going to be for the next 90 minutes was absolutely valuable.
Yeah.
It was beautiful to see the streets and the buildings and all this stuff, like
these bright colors.
Absolutely necessary. Like I think that it's underrated, and I think that we need to do more exposition in our films these days. Like, we forget. We're like, oh, let's fill every single minute with content. Like, no, sometimes you need to like easy people into this shit.
And that's exactly what this director did. Like, props to this director. We got eased into this world, like, slowly. And nothing about it. I just felt like I was completely in the world after like 5 minutes. I was just like, oh, I'm here. I know exactly where I am. I know how this works. So it was, oh my God. I can't wait to see it again. Honestly.
Word. Like we mentioned earlier, kind of trigger warning. I don't know that I could see this that many times. I think it's hard for me. I think everybody should see it at least one. Yeah, but it's a little tough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm skipping over that part, right? Like, no, not watching that if I can skip it over. And I will. I'll skip it over every time. But, no, yeah, it's so good. It's so good. I can't say. And oh my God, can we talk about the crowd? Can we talk about the diversity of those people in that crowd?
Let's set the scene for the people first.
Okay, guys.
So we're driving to Hollywood. You know, the streets are a little less crowded than normal for some reason. I guess because it's like a Sunday night and it's mm-hmm. Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. So we're driving through and we see the TCI Chinese Theater, which is this beautiful theater that's like almost hidden within like all this other commercial shit that's around. So we go and we park. We walk around. Get to the TCI Chinese Theater, have to go all the way the fuck around to the other side where we see this longest fucking line that's going looping around in a circle. And what you see, like, and this is evident, it's just queer people.
Yes.
People of color.
Yes.
Black women who are clearly together.
You older know what I mean? Black women, younger people black women, who are
younger, older,
queer
friends. You know what I mean? Like, and of course you have your white people because white people go to everything. It was a lovely crowd. I think that like the makeup of the crowd was like great.
No, it was beautiful. I was like, oh my God, this is diversity working. Like, look at this. Look who's coming to see this. Everyone. And that was beautiful.
It was really
cute. Of course,
cute.
We are like in LA at a fucking film festival. So I would hope.
I mean, it's not like...
And it was completely packed, of course.
Yeah, I think we got there early, like what I thought was going to be early, yeah. And still we were like, I think out of 100, we were like 87 or something.
Yeah, we were, but it was amazing.
It was lovely. We literally got to actually rate it 5 stars because they do like an audience award thing.
Yeah, we rated it 5 stars. So I was like, here you go. We're giving it 5.
Cinco.
But yeah, it was beautiful. We didn't get to catch Roma. Because I'm pretty sure that shit got completely sold out. And then I think they showed Mary, Queen of Scots, which I did want to see. With, what's that white girl? Cersei Ronan.
Oh my God.
I'm going to just call her Cersei.
You know what? White people can't say Maria, so that's fine.
That's fine. We can just say Cersei.
but yeah. That one girl from Lady Bird.
Yeah, the white girl from Lady Bird. You know which one.
I'm kind of looking forward to it, but I also think that it's kind of like not that complicated of a plot, so it must be some good ass monologues in that movie. I don't know.
I just think she's actually a really good actress.
She's a fantastic actress.
Like, I like her in everything, so I'm not gonna act like because she's a white girl. No, I actually really like her acting. The one I don't trust is the other one, who's gonna be, I think, both in that movie and The Favorite. Emma Stone. Like, I like her, and yet...
Emma Stone's in that?
I don't know if Emma Stone...
It's not Emma Stone.
She's definitely in The Favorite, though.
She's definitely in The Favorite. Let me look up the other one.
Yeah, look, she's in...
See, The Favorite, I kind of have the same... I think most time period pieces I have the same problem with, which is that I don't find the general concept...
Yeah, interesting.
I'm like, yeah. Okay, like, two people fucking, you know, fucking centuries ago were mad at each other. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I only want to watch it because, like, I get into, like, people being petty. You would like it because they're being petty.
I love pettiness.
Yeah, so you would love it. Like, that's just them going back and forth being petty. Like, that's their whole thing.
Mary, Queen of Scots. Gemma Chan is in this?
Gemma Chan's in it.
What?
So we're going to watch.
I'm sorry. So. That's the most excited I've ever been on this podcast. Oh, never mind. I'm excited about this film after all. Margot Robbie is who she's opposite of.
Margot Robbie's in it. Okay. And I want to watch it. I like Margot Robbie.
And I will say, I'm sure that their intent is going to come through. I don't know how we ended up on this fucking movie.
Just because it's going to be an Rafiki's better. I know. Rafiki's amazing. I'm going to purchase that one. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm going to purchase... which just came out, was Miseducation of Cameron Post. Oh, I see the queers going crazy online. I saw it twice in theaters.
Finally
I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna buy it, y'all. Watch it over and over again because it makes me so happy.
The Miseducation of Cameron Post is one of those movies that the longer that I've sat with it, the longer that I've been like, damn, that was a good movie.
I told you, dude. I told you. I was like, dude, it's really good. No, honestly, I'm going to watch it again. It was that
like
good.
The year isn't over and we plan on doing like a year's end type of episode. But I got to say, like, Miseducation of Cameron Post and We the Animals have ended up way the fuck up on my list. And these are two of the least populated theaters that I've been into.
Yeah, I mean, Miseducation of Cameron Post, the first time I went, it had people in it. And then the second time, it still had, like, maybe five or six squares, you know, in the theater.
God.
And I saw there it was twice.
There was, like, four people, including me and the two people that I made go with me.
Wow, for Miseducation?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Like, me and Glow saw it at a film festival, and then we saw it again when it just had, like, regular time, and then we went the very last day it was showing, and there was still some people in that bitch.
I want to give Desiree Akhavan every movie to make, like.
I love her. And then, like, going back to her old stuff, Appropriate Behavior is so fucking good, you guys.
Apparently,
like,
she's getting her we need to do more research into this, but she's getting her own show about bisexuality.
Yeah, you didn't know. I didn't mention that.
We just haven't, like, gone into it.
Yeah, but yeah, she's making one. But I thought it was gonna be in the UK. That's gonna be still, like, on Channel 4.
I'm still gonna watch it.
I mean, yeah, I'm just saying.
I love Desiree Akhavan.
Queer, fucking Pakistani.
She knows how to make a fucking movie.
We love her. We stan her. Like, keep making shit, girl. We'll watch all of it. Park Slope, fucking hilarious. It's on YouTube, you guys, or Vimeo.
It's like Venmo. Like,
yeah, I was about to say Venmo.
Venmo's really stepping it up, dude. Wow.
Yeah, shut up, Venmo. Producing indie movies.
They're taking your money on
honestly,
the fly.
Honestly, they should. But yeah, no, it's so good. She's so good. I love her. Hopefully, maybe one day.
For sure. Yeah. And I guess to wrap up our weekend here. Yesterday, we did more interviews and we did a photo shoot. So shout out to all the people that were involved in that. And one of the reasons that we're doing this episode, which is a very low-key episode before we start dropping interview after fucking interview,
yes.
We just wanted to give you guys a heads up. Basically, we want you to know, like, we're going to be talking to a lot of people that we've been wanting to talk to for a long time, and that, you know, some people, like, even me, like, when I listen to other podcasts, I'm like, I just want to listen to the hosts. But in this particular case, we got lucky and got some of the best fucking interviews. These people are so, like, interesting,
and they're so inspiring too. It's not just about, like, talking to people. It's about talking to people who are creative and just spreading knowledge, dropping gems. Like, if you're creative, if you're just interested in how the business works, like, honestly, these people are giving you some kind of super super amazing insight and unique, and you're gonna do a lot of learning. Take notes, guys. Take motherfucking notes.
Get ready to pull out them tissues if you're one of those people with tear ducts.
With feelings,
Yeah, I mean, we just had some really great stuff, like, and we're going to spread it out over the next, like, 2.5 months or so. So we're not going to make, like, back-to-back interviews, but you're going to get around 2 a month or so of those, and they're just all fucking golden. So I can't wait for you guys to hear it, and we just wanted to give you that heads up. But yeah, go rate and review us.
Yes, five stars. And then anytime you guys do review, just let us know. DM either My Third Eye or the CYC, whichever podcast. One is easier. Just let us know that you wrote a review for us, and we will be sending you stickers.
If you want them.
If not, then just, you know, leave That's a review. Fine. We thank you. We love you.
Know that leaving a review is one of the literal top most important things that you can do for us.
Yeah, and so other people can find us.
You know, That's one of the best things that you can do for us. The second best thing that you can do for us.
Oh my God, yes. The second best thing is you can go to
patreon.com/CYC podcast.
Yes, and support. There's three different levels, maybe four. Let me go through them. The first one is $1. We will give you a shout out if you give us $1 every month. The next one is $3, where you also have access to a Patreon episode every month, every third week of the month, every Thursday. Fourth week of the month, every Thursday. That it will be released on a Thursday. You get extra content, you get stickers. If you want some, just let us know. And the next one is the Arcoiris level. It's $10 a month, and we shout you out. You guys get to pick a Patreon episode or a regular episode. Y'all tell us what y'all want us to be about, and we'll cover it. Just let us know.
We can do it.
You can be producing on the show, basically.
For sure. And, like, yes, it is, like, a monthly thing, But you can really only, you can just do 1 month. You're going to be like, I want to shout out one time, and I'm going to give you $1 one time, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll take it. Thank
you. For sure. You don't, this isn't like a contract. you know what I mean? You can do it one time, and you can set your own prices too. You can put whatever the fuck you want on there.
I mean, yes. Any funding you give these two queer independent like creatives would be super dope, because it helped with our parking, with all our interviews. It helps us buy equipment. It helps us pay for our website to continue, so that we don't go broke doing this. So it helps both of us so much, and it helps two queer brown creatives get some shit out here, because there's too little of us. We need more. We need more people, and we need all the help we can get from our friends and fam. So yeah, tell your rich friends though, what's up.
Yeah, and absolutely, like, you know, we appreciate every single one of you no matter what. You don't have to give us anything other than your love and affection.
Oh yeah, just listen to us too, that's great.
On CYC podcasts on Twitter and Instagram, we're there to talk to anybody.
Or you can go to cabronasychingonas.com and you can see kind of our whole little website if you have any questions on
shindig
us
there,
and who we are.
We have a merchandise page. You guys don't have to get any of that either. No, but, you know, like, whatever. And then you can also talk to us on our, or just follow us on our personal stuff, which on mine is Instagram and Twitter, MYTE Panda, Mite the Panda.
Yeah, and my Twitter is at Fried Papita. And yeah, we'll be posting on there any new episodes. So yeah, let us know.
Thank you once again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, Callie. Bye.
Callie.